Welcome to the iPod, a podcast series from Ophthalmology Times, where we engage with key opinion leaders about the latest innovations in the areas of surgery, clinical diagnosis, drug therapy, research, technology, or practice management.
So we're joined here today by Dr. Rania Habash, who is Medical Director and Technology Innovation with the Baskin-Palmer Eye Institute at the University of Miami. And she's also a consultant to Microsoft and Chief Medical Officer with Everbridge. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Could you first of all talk a little bit about what are some of the current telemedicine technologies supporting the physician-patient relationship amid this pandemic?
Sure. Well, back in March, we were sort of forced to adopt telemedicine pretty quickly. And we did some of the standard things, and it was mostly used for triage of patients so that we could tell if a patient was having a serious issue and they needed to come in and be seen and risk potential exposure, or if they could just stay home and be treated. So that was kind of the first use case, but then it evolved significantly from there. And lately, we've really found a lot of ways to do telemedicine that should stick around into the future. And we're finding that it's just a better way to do medicine in general, for some things.
Are we finding that this is going to be the new standard operating procedure for medicine in general, having telemedicine in this situation like this, or?
Yeah, I believe so, for sure. I mean, you know, like I said, we have found that there are some better, smarter, faster ways to treat patients and to care for patients using virtual visits of some sort. So I think they're a great adjunct to our practices moving forward, for sure.
Using it as triage, you know, with portions of patients, helping us sort out what can be done virtually and what can be done in person.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot more than you think that can be done virtually. You know, we learned the first day of medical school that 99% of the answer lies with the patient. And so, you know, just by talking to a patient, you can very easily tell if they're having an acute symptom, if it's something concerning that they need to come in for or not. And the majority of conditions or issues require counseling and things that can be tried on the outside too. So you're minimizing their potential exposure that way also. We set up like a rapid access urgent care at Baskin-Palmer. And we found, these are rough statistics, but we found about 70% of the patients we could help with a telemedicine visit, just a video visit. So they had stuff like, you know, subconj hemorrhage, styes, eye traumas, conjunctivitis, you know, floaters that have been going on for months, you know, without any changes. Yeah, those are the types of things that we were able to sort of help while the patient stayed at home. And then we found about 30% of those had problems that, you know, triggered an alarm bell that said this patient needs to come in sooner. And when we saw that, we were able to expedite them so that they could come in through our ER or to our clinics right away. So actually the process was beautiful for both those populations, you know, so even the 30% that we felt we couldn't help while they were at home, we did help them because we brought them in for problems that needed to be dealt with.
And I suppose a facet of this too is just, you know, communicating to patients or reassuring them that so they don't feel that they're being dismissed or shortchanged by not having an actual in-person visit. What are some tactics or what are some strategies that we can use in relation to telemedicine in this aspect?
I'm glad you brought that up because I've found that messaging is one of the biggest hindrances to this. When your office staff says something like, "I'm sorry, you won't be seeing Dr. Habash today," you know, that is not true. You will be seeing me virtually, and I still will be able to do the majority of things that I need to do. And I think that patients just need to know that we would not do a telehealth visit on them if we didn't feel it could be helpful for them. And, you know, if we felt like we couldn't help them, then we would still need to bring them in, and that's fine too. But I try really hard to tell my patients, you know, to reassure them that this is a very useful visit for me. And even if it's something that I can't tell is going on, at least we know they did need to come in and risk potential exposure anyway. So that's a very important message to send. But I'll tell you that our patients have been very happy with their visits after the fact. You know, at first they may be a little bit tenuous, they're not sure what to expect, but then afterwards they are so pleasantly surprised that we got to spend this much time with them and really were able to help the majority of their problems that our scores and our feedback have been excellent.
Do you suppose this will become a regular part then of your, you know, your protocol, even after this is over, just making that a, you know, a vital part of the whole patient encounter?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a couple of really good use cases. We have a lot of different types of virtual visits at Bascom Palmer, but there are a couple that I've been using very regularly. And one of those is like cataract counseling. So I'll have a patient, we do all the, you know, pre-op measurements and all that. And then the follow-up is to talk to the patient about their lens options. And so sitting there and doing a counseling visit with them at home, with their family members with them, has been really amazing because they're more relaxed and their families are able to ask questions. If their families can't be there in person, we're inviting them on the Zoom call. So it becomes like a really nice family discussion. And we can really talk about what kind of refractive outcome we want for that patient. But I'll tell you, that has been probably the biggest help possible there, because now I'm not worried about spending time in clinic because I have a million other things going on. You know, we're able to sit there and it's actually more personal in many senses. And that's what I hear. That's the feedback I hear from patients, is that they feel it's more personal actually than in the clinic, even when we're doing these types of discussions. Mm-hmm. Another really important thing that we've been doing is a hybrid visit, where I've been attaching a slit lamp adapter, where I'm watching the entire exam virtually. So I'm seeing the technician do the slit lamp exam and talking to the patient as we go along, saying, you know, zoom in on this or mag up on this or whatever. And then afterwards talking to the patient and going over their OCT or their IOP or whatever the case may be. But they are really pleasantly surprised by how much information we're getting, and they feel like I'm right there with them anyway.
Yeah. How do you tailor then your approach with telemedicine to the specific disease state, you know, versus glaucoma versus cataract, or, you know, how do you tailor your approach with that?
Most of these patients are established, although I love having new patients too, because that's a really good opportunity to find out what they need from you, you know, and then go from there. But, you know, let's take a follow-up patient, for instance. You know, if I'm seeing a cataract patient or a glaucoma patient or whatever, mm-hmm. I would have that initial visit with them. And then oftentimes, like, let's say a glaucoma patient, if I start a new medication, I'd want them to come in just for an IOP check in about 6 weeks. But they don't need the entire, you know, showboat visit at that point. They just need to come in, get their pressure checked, and get out. And that's a very quick, easy visit for them. Mm-hmm. So that's a perfect example of a hybrid visit, where they would come in and get one targeted test, and then I would call them later to go over everything. So in the comfort of their own homes. So that's a really good example of that, where you see the patient, you kind of see what kind of tests or information you need, and then you bring them back for that in a very sort of targeted manner, where they just get the testing and get out, and then you get to do the counseling visit afterwards.
And some may say too that an unexpected byproduct of this whole pandemic is innovation that we're seeing, and perhaps it's even advanced telemedicine 15 years into the future. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. The way I got into this whole thing was I started a company about 6 years ago for telemedicine. And it's because I was trying to help a patient while I was in clinic. The patient was in the ER, and the ER doctor and I were communicating around this patient. But we were communicating non-compliantly because we didn't have anything better at the time. So we got in trouble by the compliance officer at the hospital. And it sort of prompted me to say, well, listen, and there needs to be a better way for physicians to communicate about a patient and to do a virtual visit to save a patient time and effort and to make a quick decision about a patient so they're not waiting this whole length of time. And also to help the ER doctor so he can move on to the next patient, and to help me because I had clinic patients too. So basically I found a need for better communication and virtual care. So started a company that was basically like iMessage and FaceTime, but HIPAA compliant. It was 6 years ago. It was called HIPAA Chat. Oh. And we put it on the App Store and Google Play. It went sort of viral from there, and then was acquired by a global communications company for which I still work. So that was 6 years ago, and it's taken this long for everything to sort of catch on, the rest of the world to catch on to the importance of telemedicine.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So I imagine with your experience with that, you know, you probably have some solutions and capabilities in mind that, you know, could be offered by telemedicine that physicians may not even be aware of or even thinking of right now. Like what might be some of those options?
So one of those very important things is the hybrid visits like I was talking about. Now a patient doesn't have to wait to see me in Miami at Bascom. They can basically go to any location and we can do a hybrid visit from any location. So it's so much more convenient for them. And on any day, at any time, I don't have to be in clinic for them to do that, because now they can just do the testing portion and then we can do the virtual portion from anywhere. So that has really opened up our schedules quite a bit. And, you know, it becomes like a hospital without walls then. So we're able to see patients after hours, on the weekends, whenever it's most convenient for them and in the location that's most convenient for them. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that's really been very helpful and which will absolutely stick around after the pandemic is over. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that we've been doing a lot of is, you know, second opinion consults and seeing patients internationally. So these patients can't really travel. And so we're reviewing medical records and doing virtual opinions with them. And it has been invaluable for them. I mean, often we get so many patients at Bascom who come from all over the world. They mm-hmm. spent all this money and time waiting for an appointment. They've taken time off work, you know, gotten hotel rooms, flown over. And many, many times it's something that we really could have treated or helped them with just by reviewing medical records and giving them some direction in their home countries. And so that's really been another great avenue for us recently, that we've really picked up our international visits and been able to help patients all over the world.
And so what might be some areas where there's an unmet need, where development still could be, you know, put into place, whether it's the lighting or the imaging or just security of patient data, anything like that? What are some of those areas?
I think there's definitely room for growth in the remote home monitoring department. And it's getting there. You know, we have already several options for IOP checks and home OCT, not quite yet, but it's in the works. Those are the types of things that would really benefit us moving forward. You know, if we had a way to skip that hybrid portion of the visit and have a patient do continuous monitoring from home or IOP checks or something like that from home, and then get us the information with an Internet of Things type of solution that alerts us if there's a number that's out of range or something that's out of range, I think that is the next horizon for telemedicine. Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I mean, it's a great answer. It's really great. And I was thinking like, well, okay, so let's look at some of the older population who may not be as tech savvy or, you know, as easily able to navigate telemedicine. Like, what are some pearls for helping those patients, you know, navigate their appointment or experience through telemedicine?
There's definitely room for improvement in the technology to make it a little bit less cumbersome to use. I find that there are a couple of telemedicine companies like Doximity, for example, where mm-hmm. they just send the patient a link and there's no app to download or anything like that. So that is literally the easiest thing for a patient to do. Doesn't matter what age you are or where you are, you just click the link and you're connected to your doctor. So I think as technology improves and more platforms go to that kind of you know, a link without an app, I think that that's going to be a big improvement. The other thing that we do at Bascom is, you know, we have a lot of redundancy in getting patients set up. So they have, you know, their first experiences with our scheduling department, who sets them up the first time. And then our patient access people call them to confirm and make sure they're set up and know how to use everything. They have the app downloaded, et cetera. And then we have our technicians on the day of the appointment, making sure that they've got the patient on video for us like 15 minutes before the appointment time. So everything is set up. A lot of the disasters occur when the doctors try to do stuff themselves and then they end up, you know, troubleshooting with the patient about pop-up blockers for half an hour rather than they're doing their work. And so it really is helpful to use your staff to sort of grease the wheels ahead of time and to get the patients all set up for you.
So yeah, making for a pretty seamless process there. So
exactly.
So in this extraordinary time that we find ourselves, and what is the one thing you know today that you wish you knew 5 years ago?
Huh, that's a good question, especially because I started that telemedicine company 5 years ago. That I know today, let's see. I think probably, I got to give you my honest answer, which is I already knew it worked 5 years ago. You know, I already knew how valuable it could be even 5 years ago. I think that the obstacles that we faced were the regulatory obstacles in terms of reimbursement and all these crazy regulations that were there before. And now they've been dropped for the pandemic, which is great. And now there's an executive order, of course, keeping them active. But for instance, when I started my company 5-6 years ago, what the Medicare beneficiaries had to do was get telemedicine from a place that was not their home, which is the opposite of what telemedicine should be.
Right.
So, you know, it was regulations like that that really kept anything from taking off. But now suddenly the pandemic hits and all these regulations are just thrown out the window. And it's really paved the way for us to move forward and expand telemedicine then. Not the most graceful answer, but it's the truth.
Right. I'm just curious with your, you know, entrepreneurial spirit you have here. So like, what has been a major leadership challenge that you've had to deal with, you know, since this pandemic began?
So I'm really lucky because Dr. Alfonso, our chairman at Bascom Palmer, is such a technology fan, and he's been such an enabler. I mean, from day one, he said, Rania, take the ball and run with it, you know, and he basically cleared the obstacles for me so that we could really kind of push the workflow and the processes, because it's one thing to know it's a good idea, but then it's another thing to execute on it. And that was really the biggest, you know, rate limiting factor. It's always been that way. It's just the process, because you have to sort of have your entire organization working together as a team and understanding the common goal. So it needs to go from your scheduling department, you know, from actually starts at your website, for instance, or your call center, then your scheduling department. And then every person that the patient meets along the way has to have that kind of same mentality and understand why they're doing these things. But that's been the biggest hardship, I think. And it's not because people haven't caught on. It's just that it's just such a big fish, you know, to fry, to get everyone in an organization like Bascom Palmer, for instance, to all be coordinating and to change these, you know, processes that have been going on for a very long time. But hey, we managed to do it. You know, we did it in a pinch, everyone pitched in. And, you know, I really thank Dr. Alfonso, because he made it happen that way.
That's perfect. It goes right into my next question for you. What's been a positive that's going to approach the changes the way you approach the future of telemedicine?
Well, it's more, I think, the approach for any new technology. It's, you know, it's just, it requires a new way of thinking. And one of the things that I had, you know, kind of been saying at the beginning of the pandemic was, this is kind of a Darwinian moment for ophthalmology and for medicine in general. You know, you either change the way you do things or you won't move on, you know, you won't survive. And so, you know, we have to learn to adapt if we want to survive. That's exactly what we all stepped up to do here. We've adapted to a new way of taking care of patients that's been really beneficial for them and for us. And I think that's the mainstay. That's the big take home point here, is that, you know, once we get set in our rigid ways, it's really hard to break out of those things. But as long as we keep innovating and keep adapting to the new environment, then we're going to be moving medicine forward.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is one thing that ophthalmologists aren't doing now that they should start doing on Monday?
thinking outside the box. As ophthalmologists, we are, you know, we're very type A, we're very used to, you know, we're very orderly, you know, we like everything perfect, we like to see and touch and feel and everything, but this requires kind of a suspension of those old ways of thinking, and we have to stop thinking so concretely, and I think expand our ways of treating patients. So I would say just jump in head first, try a few visits, and then you'll see the appeal afterwards.
Mm-hmm. And what are you most excited about in telemedicine technology?
It's not just telemedicine technology. I think telemedicine has now become sort of the watershed for other innovations. And so it's tied directly to remote monitoring, to artificial intelligence in medicine. You know, all of these things are tied together. And so what I'm really excited about is kind of putting the whole picture together, which is we have better, smarter, faster ways to take care of patients anywhere in the world, anywhere they are, no matter who they are, and no matter what kind of access to care they have. We are now developing tools that can reach many more patients in a much more efficient and better way than we used to before.
Okay. Dr. Rania Habash, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The iPod. We hope you subscribe at iTunes and let us know what topics you'd like to hear more about. Stay connected by going to ophthalmologytimes.com, subscribing to our newsletter, and following us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.